Collingwood was 26 when he sailed in Preston, a 50-gun ship, with Admiral Graves. They arrived in Boston on the 2nd of July 1774. Their role was to support the beleaguered army generals. Collingwood, without influence or wealth, was already old for a master's mate. It's a senior rank for a midshipman, but crucially short of an officer's commission. By now he'd been longer at sea than on land, and was evidently a fine sailor, navigator and surveyor. But he had never seen anything like proper action, and must have thought that he would end his naval career without ever being promoted. All that would change in 1775. In April came Lexington and Concord, humiliating defeats for the British against small guerrilla forces in the countryside of Massachusetts. The battle at Bunker's Hill, although it was actually fought on Breed's Hill, took place because British army generals decided to break out of Boston and show the colonials who was in charge. But the secret got out, Boston being full of rebel spies, and well before the British were ready to move, the Massachusetts militia, ill-equipped and led as they were, had fortified a small redoubt on Breed's Hill on the Charlestown Peninsula, within sight and shot of British batteries in Boston and of her Navy ships in the Inner Harbour and Charles River. All through the night of June the 16th, 1775, the rebels dug. A British officer heard strange noises and reported them, but nothing was done. At first light the following morning, HMS Lively opened fire on the entrenchments, but could not elevate her guns high enough to do more than blow the head off a single rebel. The senior British commander, General Howe, then ordered his redcoats to retake the Charlestown Peninsula, just as one might order tea and scones. Two waves of redcoats were mown down by rebels who, short of ammunition, water, food and reinforcements, were ordered by their commander, Colonel William Prescott, not to shoot until they saw the whites of the British eyes. The redcoats suffered more than 1,000 casualties, though their third wave just managed to retake the rebel positions. It was master's mate Cuthbert Collingwood who was sent by Admiral Graves to command the boats that took the reinforcements across to Charlestown, then resupply them and take off the wounded as they arrived back at the beach, under fire not just from rebel positions on the hill, but at risk from shore batteries in Boston. His coolness, good judgment and bravery won him his promotion, though for the British Army, technically victorious, it was a day of abject humiliation. Although the British regained the Charlestown Peninsula, their commanders were in such a state of shock that they failed to consolidate their gains, retreating again to Boston, which became their last continental redoubt. 9 months later, they evacuated the city, and within a year, America declared independence at Philadelphia. For much of the year 1776, Lieutenant Cuthbert Collingwood was in London. Although he was desperate to go north to be with his family, his father had died while he was in Boston, if he left London with so many other young officers also trying to get employment, he would lose all chance of another ship. So there he stayed, while news from the colonies worsened almost by the month. Although the British took New York in September, they were defeated by Washington at Trenton, New Jersey, in December. Newcastle was as concerned with the war as the rest of the country. Its burgesses, dismayed by the American situation as Collingwood was, the loss of trade was potentially disastrous, petitioned the king to bring an end to the conflict. His Majesty was unmoved. There had been another hard winter in the northeast too, with the Tyne frozen completely up as far as New Bern. But development continued, with the construction of the assembly rooms close to Collingwood's old school on Westgate Road, and the building of the City Road to the east, allowing traffic to reach Heaton and North Shields without the climb up Pandon Bank. Collingwood at last got a ship, but he must have been disappointed that it wasn't a more glamorous posting. Hornet was a 14-gun sloop, the smallest type of ship in the Navy. She was sent to the West Indies to join the Jamaica station, where, if he survived rampant disease, Collingwood might expect further promotion. But his hopes were dashed, for Hornet had a rotten captain. Her commander was Lieutenant Robert Haswell, a mean and vindictive man embittered by his failure to make post-captain. Just as midshipmen dreamed of becoming lieutenants, so Lieutenant dreamed of making the step up to post-captain. For once there, they established a position on the conveyor belt that would one day make them an admiral, if they only survived long enough. Haswell had been a lieutenant for 18 years without making post, and although that might simply have been a matter of bad luck, in Collingwood's view he was a poor officer whose conduct bordered on cowardice. "What a country is this at present to make a fortune in," wrote Collingwood. "All kinds of people wallowing in their wealth acquired by prizes, and so extraordinary an exception are we, that to be as unfortunate as the hornet is become a proverbial saying, and the black girls sing our poverty in their ludicrous songs." For the first time, a picture of the adult Collingwood can be drawn. Like most other officers in the Navy, he was zealous, desperate for glory and fortune, and if he loathed anything more than the enemy, it was a bad senior officer, incapable of commanding respect. Collingwood later admitted to having a fiery temper, and despite his vulnerable position as a lieutenant, he provoked Haswell into court-martialing him. 2 years after Bunker's Hill, he might have found himself dismissed from the Navy forever for disobedience and neglect of orders, so he must have got a grim sense of satisfaction from the fact that, although acquitted, he was admonished for want of cheerfulness and alacrity. In 1778, Horatio Nelson arrived in the West Indies in Lowestoft, a 32-gun frigate commanded by William Locker, a captain as unlike Haswell as it was possible to conceive, brave, considerate, active, and admired by both officers and men. Nelson, still only 19 and 10 years younger than Collingwood, but with political influence at home and talents that were already obvious, was promoted to lieutenant on Sir Peter Parker's flagship, and Collingwood was released from his torment by replacing Nelson in Lowestoft. Nelson's mercurial rise continued as he was made master and commander in Badger, a 14-gun brig, and then given his irreversible step up to post-captain in Hinchinbrook, a 28-gun frigate. His magnetism already apparent, he seemed to tow his friend Collingwood in his wake, as the former master's mate, now 30, was made commander in Badger and then post-captain in Hinchinbrook. Sir Peter Parker, as both the new captains acknowledged, was a great promoter of talent, and under him they flourished, gaining the confidence needed to take on the responsibility of command in His Majesty's Navy. Britain was now technically at war with both France and Spain over their support for the Americans, and it was now for the first time that Nelson got himself, and Collingwood, involved in one of those amphibious scrapes that would blight his whole career. An expedition was sent up the San Juan River in what is now Nicaragua, to see if a route could be forced through to the Pacific Ocean, where James Cook, on his third voyage of discovery, had recently been murdered by Hawaiian islanders. It was badly planned and went disastrously wrong as a Spanish garrison put up unexpected resistance, and the dangers of the jungle saw men dropping in their dozens. Nelson, ordered to provide naval support, instead became the expedition's effective military leader, and very nearly died of exhaustion and fever before he was evacuated and sent back to England. Collingwood, stationed in support at the mouth of the river, was lucky. He was one of only 20 left alive on his ship after 180 men and officers died from malaria and yellow fever, the infamous Yellow Jack. The expedition was a step backwards for both captains, and for Collingwood worse was to come. A year later, in 1781, he was given the 24-gun frigate Pelican, but she was wrecked in a hurricane off the Morant Keys in Jamaica. He got his men ashore by making rafts out of the wreckage, and 10 days later they were taken off by another frigate. Such exploits are the stuff of legend, but typically Collingwood made nothing of his own heroics. Now without a ship, he returned to England and again stayed in London, where his chances of getting another command were better than they would be 300 miles to the north.